Thank you. So can I use this one? Change slides? No? Okay. Okay, so another title of the talk would be, is the wave function just a probability distribution? So if you look at all the realist alternatives, quantum mechanics like many worlds, no collapse theories, the Boyle-Bohm theory, they all are realist about the wave function in one way or another. And the natural question arises, is there any way to avoid this? Can you have a theory in which the wave function is just a probability distribution and plays no other role than that? So this is sort of a very foundational question. It addresses the question, what's the role of the wave function, or what possible roles can the wave function have in quantum theory? So this is the outline of the talk. So this is a long talk, so I'll go a little bit fast. Always write too long talks. So there's some introduction, heuristic ideas. And we're going to make precise the idea that the wave function is just a probability distribution. We can't just talk about it. We must sort of extract some mathematical idea about that. So this we're going to do here by considering dynamics, and especially by looking at the Boyle-Bohm theory. We're going to get a good hint how to do this. Basically, this is that the transition rates in the master equation has to be independent of the quantum state. Now, in a certain class of ontological models or hidden variable theories called bell-type ontological models, you can actually prove that the transition rates must depend on the quantum state. And therefore, these are not, in these theories, the wave function cannot be thought as just a probability distribution. Rather, it's a guiding agent pushing individual systems in different ways depending on the wave function. By looking at this proof here, or this, well, one can immediately start generalizing bell-type ontological models. I'm not going to introduce the general framework, but just immediately go to the specific model, which is, I think, the simplest one of those generalized bell-type ontological models. And will be my candidate for a purely psi epistemic theory, where psi epistemic means that the wave function just plays the role of a probability distribution. So in the end, there will be lessons learned from Lucien Hardy's ontological excess baggage theorem. So that's a very important theorem in this context. So let me begin. For some Bell quotes here, so people sort of get the right context. So this is some of the very perceptive remarks by Bell when he introduced the terminology of beables. The terminology beable as against observable is not designed to frighten with metaphysics, those dedicated to real physics. It is chosen rather to help in making explicit some notions already implicit in and basic to ordinary quantum theory. For in the words of Niels Bohr, it is decisive to recognize that however far the phenomena transcend the scope of classical physical explanation, the count of all evidence must be expressed in classical terms. Classical terms here is equated with beable. So Bohr's classical terms, Bell understands as being a statement, yes, there are beables in this theory. And this point is, by Bell, is perhaps not that well known, I don't know. So here's more quotes by Bell where he's repeating this thing, where he's saying that the structure of quantum mechanics, as taken in the Copenhagen view, basically is like this. It consists of these beables, which are switches and knobs, printouts and so on, which are actually there. And then on top of that, you may also say it's a wave function, one or more wave functions and so on. And that's, of course, also the structure of the Boyle-Bohm theory. It has a definite configuration, a beable, and a wave function. So the similarity in this way is quite striking, and that's exactly the point Bell is making here. But of course, one crucial difference is the following, whilst I read this quote. It is then implicit that the apparatus of observation, or better, experimentation, and the experimental results are real and localized. We will have to do as best as we can with these rather ill-defined beables while hoping always for a more serious reformulation of quantum mechanics where the Beebles are explicit and mathematical rather than implicit and vague. So Bohr's Beeble are implicit and vague because this is about outcomes of measurements, and it's never made mathematically precise what these things are. It's just talked about. So this is one of these recurring themes in Bell's take on foundations of quantum mechanics. So the hidden variable program is just this. It's to develop empirically adequate theories in which the Beebles, which represents things like tables and chairs, are mathematical and explicit. And this is the basic idea behind the hidden variable program. Hidden variables is a fantastically stupid name for variables that are meant to represent tables and chairs, outcomes, and so on. A better word for hidden variable is ontic variable or Beebles. So, of course, we do have hidden variable theories. Here's a sort of a comparison between classical mechanics and Bohm theory, and they're very similar. In classical mechanics, we have phase space, we have a Hamiltonian, and the Hamiltonian induces a vector field on phase space. And the system is just following the integral curves of that vector field. In Bohm theory, it's configuration space. Instead of the Hamiltonian, we have a wave function, and that induces a vector field, and the configuration just follows the integral curves of that vector field. There's a difference here. While here, H is just postulated, here, psi is subject to a law. So that's an important difference. Another thing here, here you have an equilibrium distribution from which you can derive all of statistical physics and all the statistical thermodynamics, Boltzmann distributions, and so on. Here you have the same thing, also an equilibrium distribution. Just as it's possible here to have non-equilibrium distributions, it's possible to have non-equilibrium distributions here. And we have to explain why we find one distribution in nature and not another. So if you just repeat the same kind of constructions you do in classical mechanics, we can give an account for that. So here's an example. Here's a particle in a two-dimensional box in Bohm theory. You'll have a wave function and a particle. So you can start from some position. Here's some positions which are very, very close to each other. And you evolve, and they get very far away, so the system is chaotic, etc. This is the Schrödinger equation. Evolves in this way. And here, of course, the guiding equation that generates those trajectories. Now, since you know how to evolve trajectories, you can also evolve probability distribution. So take now a distribution which is not the quantum distribution. Here's psi square. That's something which is different. And let's see what happens with that distribution. Here's at, in my units, t equals 2 pi. And already here you can see that the distribution starts to look alike. And if you now scroll more, here's 4 pi. And now you start seeing that this distribution has actually converged in a very, very good way to the quantum distribution. So this is just completely analogous to what you do in classical statistical physics, where you would have a non-equilibrium distribution, which is not the uniform distribution. You evolve it, you coarse grain, and you see that on a coarse grain scale, it will approach the equilibrium distribution. So this is how you understand, from a Gibbsian point of view, why we have quantum distributions. Of course, there's also a Boltzmannian way of understanding it in Bohmian mechanics. So in Bohm theory, the wave function is primarily a guiding agent. But it's sort of a curious feature that just as a classical probability distribution branches up, for example, when I throw a coin, it started with some probability distribution being here. I flip it up, but in the end, when it falls down, it will either be heads or tails. And so the whole probability distribution branches like that. And you have similar situations when you make a spin measurement, for example, in quantum theory, that the whole wave function of the complete system will have this branching. So for some people, this is enough to not like Bohm theory. And I'm sort of half agreeing with that. I think this is, it's curious that you have sort of this similar behavior. So maybe you should take this as a hint that the wave function is just a probability distribution. But then again, in Bohm theory, that is not the case. So this talk is about exploring if you can modify Bohm theory or introduce a new theory where the wave function is just a probability distribution. And now I just stated the psi epistemic program. This is about finding an ontological model in which the quantum state just represents the probability distribution and nothing else. It should not be a guiding agent. Well, you should also make mathematically precise what you mean by this. And if you make it mathematically precise, introduce mathematically precise criteria, you should make sure that the Broglie-Bohm theory isn't the psi epistemic theory, because that's sort of the sort of example I'm having here. That should not be one of those theories. Here's also another thing. Many features of the Broglie-Bohm theory, such as non-locality, are universal. So it might be that this is a universal feature of the Broglie-Bohm theory, that the wave function has to play the role of a guiding agent. And this would be an important theorem. So this is part of this exploration I'm making here. So mathematical criteria for a theory to be psi epistemic has already been written down by Speckens, Barrett, Hardy, Harrigan, and I don't know what more on that list. Here, I will not worry so much about this. The model I will present will trivially satisfy this condition. I'd rather like to focus on a dynamical constraint, which I'm going to impose on psi epistemic theory, which is just this, that the wave function should not guide individual systems. So this is also logically independent from Speckens and et cetera's mathematical criteria. So let's now consider dynamics here. Here's just a very schematic view of an ontic state space and an ontic exact configuration. And when you evolve it, it's just going to change. It's just going to change configuration like that. Of course, we are making an assumption here. We're making that assumption that you can split the whole history into sequences of instants. It's non-trivial, of course, but quantum theory sort of have the same structure, so it's not a big assumption, I think. And also, if you look now how probability distributions evolve, I'm going to assume now that they evolve according to a master equation. So this is also one of the key defining things in a hidden variable theory or a Beeble theory, there should be something, an equation like this. These things are called transition rates. Intuitively, there is just about what is the probability per unit time for jumping from J to I. This equation here consists of two terms. One term, which gives a positive contribution to the rho dot here, it's simply all the ways you can get to that point I. So that will be a positive contribution to rho dot. So rho will increase. And this term here just corresponds to all the guys jumping away from it. These are the conditions on the transition rates. Off-diagonal components are non-negative. This is absolutely essential. Diagonal components, TII, do not enter in the master equation, and they're completely irrelevant and completely arbitrary. These transition rates can be infinite. So there's some mathematical results with Tumulka and Georgi here. For example, in Bohm theory, the transition rates will be infinite when we have nodal points for the wave function. So here's just a simple example of a light bulb. It has two states, working and broken. There's some probability of getting to a broken light bulb. This transition has a transition rate zero because it's very improbable to get from a broken one to a working light bulb. So if you just solve this equation here, you just get the typical exponential decay law. So this is, we're not doing anything very fancy here. So here's important that if you formulate the Broglie-Bohm theory in terms of this language of master equations and transition rates, then the transition rates are dependent on the quantum state. So I will introduce this dynamical constraint now. So this is the key feature I'm picking up from the Broglie-Bohm theory, that if you like the theory to be psi-epistemic, then the transition rates should be independent of the quantum state. So this is sort of the thing I'm picking up from the Boyle-Bohm theory. The ontic state. So there's just one Beable, right? So I like the evolution of the Beable to be governed by a transition rate, and that transition rate has to be independent of psi. In the Broglie-Bohm theory, that's not the case. And therefore, I'm saying this, the wave function is not just a probability distribution, it's actually pushing things around. So this is sort of the. So I would say that if the transition rates depend on psi, and psi plays the role of a guiding agent. So there's a confused observer. This is a very natural constraint. Suppose you have an observer, and let us assume also that the wave function is just the probability distribution now. So he could, for example, represent his knowledge here now. And he's confused. He either thinks he has this knowledge or that knowledge. If it's the case that the theory or the theory is such that the evolution of an individual depends on which knowledge this guy is, that's simply absurd. So, I mean, it's the requirement I'm making here is something very obvious. If psi is just something like knowledge of an observer, the individual system should not depend on his knowledge. But of course, this is the mathematical constraint I'm imposing, and this is sort of the heuristics. So let us look at this constraint in bell-type ontological models. Bell-type ontological models is when you have an n-dimensional quantum system. So the Hilbert space dimension is n. And you have a quantum state and a Hamiltonian h. In a specific basis, then we can just express rho and h like that. And the Schrodinger equation just looks like this. So how do we introduce Beables in this theory? Well, we just think of this I here as an ontological property. And rho II, the diagonal components of the density matrix, just as the probability of the system having that property I. So the lambda here would just be I. And rho of lambda is rho I, which was the diagonal components of the density matrix. The evolution of this ontic distribution now, or sorry, the distribution on the ontic state space is just given by the diagonal like that. So we also require now that this distribution here should be governed by a master equation. Recall that that was one of the fundamental premises now, that we should have a master equation working for us. So So let's introduce some notation here. Jij is just this thing here. Our task is now to find transition rates Tij so that this thing here is just equal to that thing there. So that was part of the Schrodinger equation with the sum, and this thing comes from the master equation. And that was equal to rho dot, and that thing should also be equal to rho dot, as in this equation. So here's the, can you find such transition rates? Yes, easily. This is just the choice by Bell. Note that with this particular choice of transition rates, then they depend on the quantum state. Here's, for example, rho j, and here are the off-diagonal terms of the density matrix as well. So this is sort of trivially does not satisfy our requirement that the transition rates are independent on the quantum state. So it's a natural question now to ask, is it possible within this framework of bell-type ontological models to find transition rates that do not depend on the quantum state? And the answer here is no. And you can proceed by a proof of contradiction. Let us therefore assume that the Tij does not depend on the quantum state. Well, that in particular implies that this term here does not depend on the off-diagonal components of rho ij, so when I is different from j. Well, if that is the case, we have we immediately get a contradiction, because this is not dependent on the off-diagonal terms, but this part here depends only on the off-diagonal terms. So So here's complete absurdity. And we have to give up the assumption that Tij does not depend on the quantum state. So this is the proof of contradiction. And now I'll get to my specific model, where we sort of are going to try to get out of this contradiction by generalizing the Bell ontological model framework. So here it's crucial to understand that we get a contradiction because rho I did not uniquely determine the quantum state. If I give you rho I get the diagonal components of the density matrix. I don't get the off-diagonal ones. So the trivial contradiction, in this sense, comes just from this feature. And this is the key thing I need to pick here. So yes, Bell was right in many cases. Maybe he's right here as well, but it's a bit misleading. He's saying that not all observers can be given Beeble status, for they do not all have simultaneous eigenvalues. They do not commute. Well, I'm going to generalize the model just by giving more Beebles to operators that do not commute. And this is, I'm sure Bell wasn't that confused, but it's sort of misleading in this setting here. You can trivially introduce Beeble properties for operators that doesn't commute, and that's been pointed out before as well. So here we go. I'm going to start just from the unitarity of quantum mechanics, that the Hamiltonian and the density matrix are Hermitian operators. And therefore, we can express any quantum state and any Hamiltonian in the following way, where these TAs are generators of UN. That is, it is the basis of the space of Hermitian operators. So, and these are n squared generators. So this is just the unitarity of quantum mechanics, that we're talking about Hermitian operators, density matrix Hermitian, Hamiltonian Hermitian. Now I'm going to choose a simple basis. And indeed, this is the simplest possible basis for the space of Hermitian operators that one can think of. Here's an operator MAB. Should be hat on these guys here. Got that. This is symmetric with A and B, and that is anti-symmetric with respect to A and B, and it's going to be important later. We can now count the number of operators we have. This is symmetric. Sorry, that's anti-symmetric part, and that's the symmetric part, and together we get n squared operators. So I won't bother you with showing why this trivially is a basis for the for the space of Hermitian operators. Well, maybe I should do that. So the diagonal components here, when you have 2, 2 for the M operators, are simply just projectors on the diagonal. So you can, if you like the density matrix, have the value C right there, you just put the C there in the sum. And if you like an A over here, so these guys are the one with a 1 there and a 1 there. So if you like an A there and A there, then you just contribute with that term. And then if you like an IB, an imaginary term, you just add the term like that. And if you sum operators like that together, you can get any diagonal you like. You can get any thing here. And it will always be Hermitian, because you always get B and minus B there. So the diagonal operators, or these guys, MAA, they constitute a set of n commuting projection operators, and they have eigenvalues 0 and 1. The off-diagonal ones, MA, different from B, are elementary permutation operators, or swap operators, swapping the points A to B. And they have eigenvalues 0 and plus minus a half. And these guys are antisymmetric, so when I switch AB, I get minus this thing here. They're also a type of permutation operators. And the eigenvalue spectra is similar there. It's 0 or plus minus 1 half. So here's a natural ontology I can just sort of read off from these operators. Well, the n commuting projection operators could be taken to represent the position PVM. Well, it is a position PVM on a discrete lattice with n points. So just like in the Broglie-Bohm theory, I will assume that only one of the projectors has value 1 and the rest 0. Thus, corresponding to the PVM, this guy with all the projection operators here, we associate an ontic property x which we interpret as a particle occupying a definite position x on the lattice. The position property can take these values. So that's an obvious ontology to attach to this PVM. The off-diagonal symmetric operators M, A, B have eigenvalue 0 and plus minus a half. So since we only have three distinct eigenvalues, the ontic property we're going to introduce here now, mu AB, corresponding to this operator, needs only three distinct attainable values corresponding to the eigenvalues. So this is how we interpret it. Here's the points A and B on our lattice. If that value of mu, the eigenvalue is plus, we're going to have a non-local link like that. I call that bosonic because it has a plus value. It's just a name. If it has minus value, there's also a link, but it's a fermionic one. So if that value is 0, there's no link. So this is the, sort of the obvious thing I can do here. So there's three possible states of these points you can see here. Could be no link, a bosonic link, or a fermionic link. And it's or here. It's not the superposition or anything like that. It's either or. So these operators are antisymmetric, and that immediately suggests that these represent directed links. So for example, if I had, so this new AB would be the ontic property corresponding to those operators. So if I have a plus value, I interpret that as having a sort of a graph or a link going from B to A here. And if there's minus one, it's going from A to B. And if it's zero, there's no link between those points. So this is just taking the obvious, simplest choice of the basis of the space of Hermitian operators. And then you just basically read off the ontology there. So in a sense, this ontology here is suggested immediately by the unitarity of quantum mechanics. So how do I pick a specific ontic state? Well, first you need to say where the particle is, maybe three. Then you need to say if there's a link or what kind of link there is between point one and two. So I can pick, for example, yes, there's a bosonic link here, et cetera, et cetera. So just cross here where I have things. So here's an example of one possible ontic state. I say it's in position three. There's a link between 1 and 2. Between 2 and 3, there is no directed, oh, sorry. It's 2 and 3, there we have it. Yeah, there's a directed link going from 3 to 2, et cetera. So already here, what's interesting is that it starts looking a little bit like ideas from quantum gravity with graphs and links and so on. And Lise Molin has been interested in this kind of graph structure to get something like quantum mechanics. So I was quite surprised that, I mean, something like this naturally emerges just from the unitarity of quantum mechanics. If you just play the same thing, if you try to read off an ontology from this operator basis, you get something like that immediately. He doesn't, of course, imply that now we're doing quantum gravity. It just looks a little bit like it. So the quantum state can now be expressed as a linear combination of these operators now. 4 minutes. Oh, shit. So it's just the expansion. I won't have time to get through all the talk. So the expectation value of MAB is simply just CAB, this thing here. The expectation value of NAB is just DAB. So the naive, obvious thing is just to introduce a probability distribution on the state space so you recover those expectation values. So this I do in this sense here. So I want to press on a little bit further. So by doing this, it is clear that specifying an ontic distribution on the state space, I can uniquely determine the quantum state from it. So it's not like the Broglie-Bohm theory in this sense. Specifying the ontic, the distribution on ontic state space uniquely determines my density matrix. There's also, just in the broad bone theory, there's things like non-equilibrium distributions, and we need to have an account for why we get equilibrium distributions in the end. So there's different ways of doing that. Speckens, Bartland, and Rudolph, they want to impose an epistemic constraint on the probability distribution, so that always you get quantum statistics. Of course, there's another more conventional approach to it. It's the one we find in classical statistical physics, Gibbs Turing, and that distributions converge toward equilibrium distributions, and perhaps also Boltzmann distributions. So I have zero time left. So what you need to do now is to look at the Schrodinger equation. I'm just going to quickly end with this. Schrodinger equation will imply constraints on the dynamics of this theory. So you just, this is the Schrodinger equation rewritten in this operator basis. Basically, the end. When you do all this work here, you can show that the Schrodinger equation is on this form. These guys contain the information on the transition rates. These have to be orthogonal to the ontic distribution on state space. There's also an extra condition that the transition rate should be independent of psi. That could also be implemented. So there's too little time, I'm afraid. So. Yeah, so if you look at, so I need some chalk. Do you have some chalk? So you can basically look at these equations, those conditions that you get from the Schrodinger equation, and you'll see that qualitatively, for example, if you have a particle here, and this is sort of your lattice, and if you have a link like this, that link can basically push the particle over here. This is a qualitative feature of it. And if the particle is here, you can also sort of read off from these equations that there should be a probability of creation of either non-directed links or directed links. So this is, but the task here is to solve for these equations to get explicit expressions of the transition rates. And also so that they do not depend on the quantum state. Yes. So the only free parameters it can depend on is the parameters in the Hamiltonian and not the quantum state. Did I get that?